Blog Talk Radio.
Are you ready to live your life by design in 2009? Well, then sit back, relax, and enjoy an empowering conversation to advance and enhance your life. And now, your host, Ms. Kathy Holloway Hill and Mr. Tony Lamont.
Good evening, good evening. This is Kathy Holloway Hill, and you have me with you for the next 60 minutes. Unfortunately, I'll be flying solo this evening. My wonderful co-host will not be joining us this evening. He is such a busy individual. I know most of you out there may know that we're going to be coming up on the Indiana Black Expo here soon, and he is involved in some pre-activity events related to that. So he will be back with us next week, so just tune in next week because he'll be here. But we have a really exciting show for you this evening, and I'm so excited about our guest that's going to be coming on a little bit later. But first, before I get to that, I have a very exciting announcement for all of my outstanding listeners, everyone that's going to be joining us in the chat room, on the archive downloads, and everyone listening live. I will be releasing my first book entitled Emotional Bailout: 9 Principles for Rising When Your World is Falling. And I am so excited about the release of this new book. I have a big surprise and celebration in store for you guys, because we're going to be releasing this book on July the 10th. So mark that date, July the 10th. That's going to be my debut book release date, and we are going to be releasing it with a bang. I mean, we're going to have fabulous prizes and free gifts and giveaways, and I'm partnering with some great, outstanding people that are just really committed to you bailing yourself out of your emotional situation, because I know there is a lot of emotional turmoil in our country right now. I know there is. And for those of you who are just joining us in the chat room, I just announced that my fabulous co-host, Mr. Tony Lamont, unfortunately, won't be joining us this evening, so he will be back next week. But I am talking about the wonderful announcement of my new book entitled Emotional Bailout: 9 Principles for Rising When Your World is Falling, and that's going to be coming out on July the 10th, and we are planning a great release campaign, and I tell you guys, we have so many special things planned for you, so many free gifts, and so much. Just a wonderful package for you to design around your life, because I know your emotions are in a very difficult place right now, because the economy is bad. It's bad. But this book is going to help you now, and it will help you in any emotional crisis, because you know we always have something going on in our lives emotionally. So we have to stop and think about what is controlling our emotions, because we do allow things to control our emotions. So that book is coming out, and I'm going to be talking a lot more about that over the next few weeks coming up. So stay tuned for that. I'm very excited about that. Now, before we bring our fabulous guest on the line for the evening, I just want to tell you a little bit about next week's show. Coming up next week, we have our Women's Relationship Wednesdays. Yay, I'm really excited about that. I love those shows. And we will have Dr. Jackie Black. She will be joining us. She's a PhD, and she's internationally known, recognized authority on relationships. So she will be joining us next week to talk about our relationship discussions. Tonight, we have a wonderful guest this evening, and actually the show tonight, Sex, Money, and Spirit, is named after her fabulous CD. She has a CD out with that title, and I am going to go ahead and bring our guest, Dr. Kathleen Hendricks, on the line, because I am very excited to get to her and start the discussion. Kathleen, are you there?
I am here.
How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing just fine. Where I am, it's afternoon, so it's great that we're spanning the time zones here.
I know, that's right. You're on the West Coast, right?
That's correct.
Yes, 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 yes. So it is afternoon out there. Is the weather pretty?
Oh, it's absolutely beautiful. We're having a late spring day and a little bit of breeze. It's just on the borderline of being hot, but we've had a lot of overcast lately, so it's very welcome to have the sun back.
Right, I know. I know we've had a lot of bad storms, but, you know, our part of the country, we're just known for tornadoes and storms and all that stuff. So, I mean, we are really getting our share this year.
That's how it is. Fortunately, we have all of these great ways of connecting now so that we don't have to take our bodies from place to place. We can, you know, connect over the airwaves and share with each other. So it's great to be with you.
Yes, and I am so happy to have you with us this evening. And, boy, I tell you, Now, first of all, Kathleen, am I pronouncing your name right? Because
it's actually Kathleen.
Kathleen, you know, because I was wondering about that, because the way it's spelled, it could be Kathleen or Kathleen, so
yes,
I wasn't sure.
Yes, yeah. And everybody who knows me calls me Katie, so you're welcome to call me Katie. It's just that my books are written with Kathleen, so, but once people get to know me, everybody calls me Katie.
Well, I understand about the name situation because my Kathy is spelled with a C.
Yes.
And every time I see it with the K, it's kind of like, just kind of drives a nail in my coffin.
Yep, it is. I understand. My name has been mispronounced by everybody, including Oprah. So.
Oh, my God. Well, you probably didn't say anything to her, but.
I noticed was that her producer spoke to her, and she corrected it right away.
Good. Because there is nothing worse than mispronouncing someone's name, because I have been called, I don't go by Katie, but I have been called Katie so many times, I can't even tell you.
Yeah, people just assume that they know. So, you know, it's always good to get that clear at the beginning.
And, you know, I know I won't spend too much time on this, but, you know, another thing that I just don't like, unless I offer someone, like you just told me, people call me Katie, so if you'd like to call me Katie, it's okay.
Yes.
Unless I say that, I hate for people to just take it upon themselves to shrink my name.
Yeah, back in the old days, we called that good manners.
It's not Kat. It's not Kat or Kath. Mm-hmm. It's Kathy.
Right.
what they do it.
Yeah. I think our modern culture of sort of false intimacy, you know, doesn't really allow people to take the steps toward, you know, toward mutual, you know, creating the intimacy between them as they choose to rather than having it be expected. And I kind of like the old way of asking people's permission.
Yes, me too. I'm very old school when it comes to something like that. Now, Katie, I tell you, I love the title of your CD. And and another thing I really love, and then I want you to just talk a little bit about your company and your everything that you and your husband work on together. I love the fact that you're doing that. I think that is so wonderful. Whenever I see a couple together and they have the same mission, they have the same purpose, and everything is centered around, I just love that. I absolutely love it. So I'm going to let you have the floor and just talk a little bit about you and your husband and your company. And because, I mean, you guys have been everywhere. For my listeners, you just heard Katie say they've been on Oprah, CBS, 48 Hours, CNN. I mean, you've been everywhere. So just tell us.
I don't know if we've been everywhere. I haven't been to Russia, but we've been to a lot of places. And I appreciate the invitation. My husband, Gay, and I have been together almost 30 years. And one of the things that we decided right at the beginning of our relationship is that we wanted to have a life of unity. We wanted to have a life where we really did what we loved to do, and that there was really no difference between our vacation or our work, that when you're doing what you love to do, you don't really need time off because your work really refreshes you and renews you. And we wanted to have a life where we could partner together And we decided early on that we wanted to have a relationship that operated primarily on positive energy, although we didn't quite know what that meant. And back then in 1980, we didn't see any models of really successful, thriving relationships. But we decided that that's what we wanted. We wanted to have a relationship that really broke free from the ups and downs of feel good and then create an argument and then feel bad, or then dig yourself out and feel good and then break an agreement and then feel bad and have to dig yourself out. And so we made a commitment, which we think is the most powerful first step in creating anything new, which is to put your whole mind and body into it and say, okay, this is the path that I'm going to move along. And so that's what we decided to do. And after making that that commitment, then we spent several years really learning about what does it take on a day-to-day basis and sometimes a moment-to-moment basis to actually have a relationship that runs primarily on positive energy. And what we have created over the last 30 years is what I call a roadmap to thriving relationships. We've used our own relationship as kind of laboratory, and the things that we've discovered that worked really, really well for us, we've shared with others, first small groups and then larger and larger groups. And then when we went on Oprah, we sort of went from having, you know, a few couples in our living room to speaking to 10 million people, and that kind of changed the nature of the game. And we've been really fortunate to be able to share our many books and our seminars with lots of people around the world, particularly here in the States and in Europe. I'd say that's the primary places where we've done our live seminars, but our books are translated into over 20 languages, and so they're available all over the planet.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I'm very, very curious about your sex, money, and spirit.
Yes.
Now, I do have, and I'm going to get to that in a few minutes, because
sure.
I just read The Big Leap, so I'm going to get to that soon.
Mm.
Fabulous.
Wonderful.
But, yes, it was. But
yeah, that's Dave's new book.
Yes, that's fabulous. And like I said, I'm going to get to that in a minute. But I want to talk about your CD, Sex,
yes.
Money, and Spirit.
What
prompted you to do that?
Well, several years ago when I was, I teach seminars, I'm our primary facilitator. Each of us really works in what we call our area of genius,
and
I love to work with people to open up a place where they can discover their own inner voice, their own inner purpose, and discover how to create a life where they access their own well-being, and they also create relationships that where they can give and receive more love and harmony every day. And that's what I do. And I was doing that at a in Nevada one year, a few years ago, and I had agreed to give a lecture to a group in the community as a kind of a fundraiser. And what people are most interested in relationships, of course, is sex and money. And those are the areas that cause the greatest conflict for most partners. If it's most people think it's sex, but it's actually money that's the number one cause of conflict.
They're kind of neck and neck problems.
They're kind of neck and neck, and in some ways they're related. But what we discovered is that sex and money and creativity all come out of the same. I kind of think of it as the one hose theory and the one nozzle theory. If you think of going out to water your lawn and you turn the hose on, what comes out of there is the same water. You might use it to water all kinds of different things, but it's the same water. And there are a couple of different ways that you can control the hose. One is by opening up more flow, and the other is by making sure that you've undone all of the kinks in the hose. And so I think human beings are exactly the same, that we have energy running through us, and the energy of feelings and the energy of creativity and the energy of sexuality are all the same energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if I express that, then I'm going to open up more and more energy. And if I don't, if I get a kink in my hose, like by withholding something, then all of my energy gets depleted.
Right, right. That makes sense. That makes perfect sense. And so, I know, now when did you do that? When did you do that CD? Do you have a book as well, or did you just do the CD alone?
I did the CD myself. The CD is my presentation, and it's a taping of the presentation that I made.
Okay.
And what it is really, the basic theory that we've seen work for thousands of people is that the more you open up to celebrating the energy in your body, your breathing, your feelings, saying what's really true for you, what you're experiencing, then the more vitality you experience. And if you open up to feeling all of your feelings, including your sexual feelings, and make a distinction between feeling all of your feelings and enjoying feeling them and being really smart about how you express them, then you're doing the same thing that you would do as if you were controlling the nozzle on a hose. You've got all the flow, but you're directing it where you choose to direct it. You're not letting it spew out all over the place. So when people open up to really enjoying their experience of being in a body, enjoying their body sensations and their emotions and their thoughts that come up, and sharing those transparently and straightforwardly with other people, they feel more vital, they feel sexier, they feel juicy in their lives. And we've seen, you know, both in our own lives and with thousands of people, that people get more creative. It's all the same juice. And so if in contrast, if you clamp down on your feelings, for example, a lot of people won't let themselves feel sexual feelings because they're not supposed to, because they might, you know, notice somebody down at the gym and have some sexual feelings about them, and then they go, uh-oh, I'm not supposed to feel that because I'm in a relationship, and that means I don't have any sexual feelings for anybody but my partner. That's a way to put a kink in your hose so that you feel less of everything. You feel flatter, and then what we've seen happen is that people then become more dissatisfied with their partner. Their partner starts looking boring, and then they, out of that confusion about if I feel my sexual feelings, it means I'm going to act on them. When people have that confusion, they tend to shut down all of their feelings, and it makes life, a lot more rigid. Whereas if you let yourself simply enjoy, one of the perks of being human is that there are all these wonderful bodies walking around, and you have sexual feelings when you have them, just like rain comes when it comes, you can choose how you're going to express that so that you can have, enjoy the wonderful world of feeling sexual and make a clear choice to express those sexual feelings. Like Gay and I have a very clear agreement that we express those sexual feelings with each other, and we enjoy all the sexual feelings we have whenever we're having them.
You know, I really love the way you put that. I love the way you put that because you're absolutely correct. Sexuality is, it's a part of life. It's a part of who we are. And there are so many couples that, you know, that they have so many restrictions. I mean, my partner and I mean, we haven't really been together too long, a few years, but we don't really, we don't worry about, I mean, if he happens to say somebody else is pretty, or if I happen to say somebody looks good, another guy, I mean, we don't take that as, oh, that means you want the person. That just
right.
means, like you said, we're expressing our sexuality, and everybody sees things. The eyes are made for sight. I mean, when you see something that's pleasant, you're going to say something about it being pleasant looking. So,
and indeed,
I
and
really
if
you like
don't, I really think that it's if people got that one thing cleared up, that they really let themselves enjoy their feelings, especially their sexual feelings, and they put their attention on being impeccable about their agreements, about how they're going to act, that a lot of the problems in relationships would get cleared up.
Right. And you know what, Katie, I think another aspect to that is, the security, you know, the self-esteem of the individuals. I mean, when your self-esteem is low and you're feeling insecure about yourself, then you're not comfortable with your mate making a comment about someone else or something else. You know, you don't want to hear it because every little thing is going to make you feel like your mate wants someone else other than you.
Yes,
so
and
it has
whenever
a lot to do.
Yeah, I think that's a very, very good point, Kathy, that, you know, if I find myself having that reaction or someone that I'm working with, you know, gets upset about their partner, you know, expressing some sexual feelings about somebody else, I always use that as a mirror to, okay, what is it about me that I'm not bringing my own loving focus to? What about
right.
me am I not valuing? What really needs to be loved here? Because it's really, you know, as we all know, these days, your relationship is a great mirror for what's going on inside you.
Right. Absolutely. And, you know, what you said about the energy flow and having, you know, just being more energetic when you're doing what you want to do and doing everything you love, I am just on the exact same page in the exact same sentence. I'm in the exact same words. I mean, I am so in tune with what you just said because I was in corporate America for over 20 years.
Yes.
And, Katie, I'm going to tell you, I hated every minute of it.
Yes, and it's such a drain on the soul.
And I was stuck. I could leave. Of course I had the power to leave, but the income was so great that I felt like, oh, that's the only way I'm going to be able to make an income like this. And, this
mm-hmm.
and I was a slave to income. And when I finally woke up, and I prayed about it, and when I finally woke up one day, I mean, we're talking 28 years in corporate America, so I'm no spring chicken, but I walked away from it, and I tell you, I am absolutely dead serious. All my listeners, please hear me. When I did that, that's the day I started living.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was thinking, wait a minute, I'm older now. I shouldn't be more energetic. I shouldn't be more sexual. I shouldn't be more. I mean, it's like my life totally changed. It's like
mm-hmm.
now, before and after corporate America.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
now
we
I'm
hear
doing
that a
what
lot.
I feel like I was put on this earth to do. I'm living my purpose.
Oh, I really appreciate hearing that. And that's really one of the intentions of our work and the CD that we're talking about is to invite people to keep asking, what do I really want? What do I really want to do? And what do I love to do so much that when I'm doing it, time disappears? And
yes.
everybody has something that they love to do, and most people don't think, they think, oh, I couldn't possibly make a living with that, or, you know, that couldn't possibly, you know, bring me enough income. But they don't realize the incredible power and magnetism of living in your purpose, because you're really living with a kind of vitality that's so magnetic and so attractive to other people, and it really draws to you the resources and the opportunities that allow you to have more and more chances to share your genius with others, and becomes a kind of an upward spiral rather than a downward trend.
You're absolutely correct. I mean, I have read, you know, so many of your books, you and your husband, and when I decided, because I've always known what I love to do. I've always known what my purpose was. I was a mentor years ago. I've always been a mentor. I've always wanted to help people enhance their lives. And I've always known that, but I just did not want to act on it. But when I finally did, I tell you, and I know, universe, please hear me when I say this. I tell you, the last thing on my mind was making money. I wanted to do what I was placed on this earth to do. And you know what? It's like the gates of heaven have opened and
yes.
opportunities are falling from heaven. They really
Isn't
are.
Isn't that a wonderful thing?
Yes, opportunities are. And just what you said is right, because I'm attracting that energy to me because I'm releasing so much positive energy toward what I love.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm passionate about. I got an invitation to do a local interview on a TV station here recently, and when I went in to speak to the producer, he said, my goodness, your passion and your energy is infectious.
Right, and that kind of passion really attracts other people, and then you get to collaborate with others, which is one of the big joys in life, rather than, you know, being isolated in your own little work cubicle or in your, in your
right.
own mind. You really get a chance to live out of your purpose. And I think when people are doing that, they access a level of creativity that I don't think we've even seen on this planet. You know, the level of transformation that's possible when people are living at that level. And that's one of the things I'm really looking forward to, is more and more people opening up to living in, you know, day-to-day, living in their creativity.
Can you hear me, Katie?
Yes.
Okay, I thought something had happened to my phone line. Okay, great. Yes, that is absolutely correct. Now, you know, let's talk a little bit about the big leap, because
sure.
I really like this. Is this the most current book?
Yes, it is. It's the most current book. It just came out. It's Gay wrote it, and it contains, I think, one of the most important principles that we've ever discovered, and the one that we think really puts a kind of a wonderful bookend on all of our body of work, and that is that the big problem that everybody faces in life is really living at their maximum level of purpose and contribution. And we call this problem the upper limits problem, that everybody has a thermostat setting for how good they can feel, for how much love and positive energy they can actually receive. And that thermostat level isn't something that we individually set. It was really set for us sometimes by the culture, sometimes by our families, sometimes by a combination of school and friends and what you saw at the movies. But the basic message is, don't feel too good. Don't
mm-hmm.
be too full of yourself. And I remember my father telling me on several occasions, you know, there's many a slip twixt the cup and the lip, you know, whereas you intend to do something, but there's always a chance that things messing up. So you better be careful all the time. Be careful. And that message that so many of us have received of how good we can actually feel, what that creates for us is a thermostat setting. And when we exceed that setting, you know, like by meeting somebody we really like, having a real animated conversation, or, you know, being out on the, you know, out in nature and really feeling a kind of unity with life, or, you know, having great sex, there, when we exceed how that thermostat level, we learn to do something unconscious to bring ourselves back to a more familiar level. And that's
mm-hmm.
what we call the upper limits problem. And we think that the basic issue for all of us, as not only as individuals but as a species, is raising the thermostat so that we're actually able to handle more and more of things going well. So we have things we do individually, and we have things we do collectively to bring ourselves back down. So individually, one of the most common ways to lower your thermostat is to criticize yourself. So saying something and then having that critical thought come up of like, oh, that was a stupid thing to say, or, well, couldn't you have said that a little better, or, oh, there you go again. Those thoughts that most people have are the most common way that people bring themselves back to that more familiar kind of deadened feeling. Also in relationships, criticizing your partner is probably the most common way that people lower the thermostat. And as a culture, I think the most common way that we lower the thermostat is by not taking responsibility, by the breaking of agreements and then blaming others. So the kind of non-accountability doesn't really build a strong enough container in which each of us can expand and feel better as human beings. So our work is all about teaching people how to shift quickly when they find themselves getting stuck in an upper limits problem, and then also how to expand your capacity for feeling good. And it really is related to the CD of Sex, Money, and Spirit, because it's really all about opening more flow, being able to handle more flow of love, more flow of breath, more flow of sensation, more flow of connection with others.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You know, Katie, I'm going to ask you a question because you're so on point, and everything you're saying is absolutely fabulous. And there are so many listeners, well, so many people, period, but there are so many listeners that have been laid off.
Yes.
And they've lost their job, and they've lost their hope, and they've lost, you know, because I've got a new book coming out. I don't know if you heard me introducing it.
I did. Congratulations.
Well, thank you. And what really inspired me to write the book is that a lot of my new clients are, when they lose their job, they lose their hope.
Yes.
And that's what prompted me to write Emotional Bailout, 9 Principles for Rising When Your World is Falling, because I would like for you to just say something to the people out there that have lost their job and
mm-hmm.
they feel like their life is over, but it's not. It's
yeah.
not. What can you say to them to help bring their self-esteem up and tell them that there's more than corporate America?
You know, it's I really appreciate you offering this opportunity. It's something that I saw firsthand, you know, years ago when my father stopped working for GM and took a, you know, after a while took a position with another company, a local company, where he took a lower level of pay. And but what the key thing there was that he used that transition as an opportunity to look at, am I doing what I really love to do? Is there something that I could be engaged in that brings me joy and satisfaction beyond the money? So I think if people put the money first, that they're going to get themselves back into the same trap all over again, because ultimately, of course, we all need money and resources to be able to take care of ourselves and our families and our homes. And I think that, you know, what we've seen in our studies of communities around the world where the majority of people in the world live on less than $2 a day, the majority of, you know, 3 billion people on the planet live on less than $2 a day. How do they do it? They do it by being connected with others. They do it through their giving and receiving as a community, as a larger community. And I think this is a great opportunity for us to come out of our nuclear families and begin reaching out to others, to begin operating more in the kinds of communities that some of us who were children of the 60s are, you know, still remember, like the, you know, the free clinics and the places where we would pool our resources for a community garden. I think there are many, many opportunities here for people to rediscover that we have many more resources than we think we do if we weren't such a money culture. Now, given all of that, what we know psychologically is that if people express what's really true for them, even if they feel, you know, despondent or bitter, if they express that simply by writing, by letting themselves write in an unedited way, you know, for several days in a row, they actually are going to not only feel better, rebound more quickly, but the research has shown that those people who do that, who actually express what's true for them, even if those feelings are painful, get back into the job market much more quickly than those who kind of keep a stiff upper lip and buck up. So I would encourage people to really let themselves feel what they're feeling and to find a safe person or a safe way to express those feelings. That's the beginning of transforming, is to actually share with somebody what's going on for you and not try and just kind of keep it all to yourself and be a hero. And it would seem counterintuitive that, you know, you should be strong and kind of carry on, but real strength comes in letting yourself get in touch with what's really going on inside you and sharing it with someone else in an authentic way. And if you don't have somebody, you can share it on paper, and it's just as powerful. So that's the first thing that I would recommend to people, is get out what's inside you so you're not kind of simmering it inside and letting it kind of eat away at you. And then the second thing is to use your contacts with your just the people who are around you to open up to being supported, to ask for support, and to keep asking yourself the question, what is it that I really love to do? This is a place where people would kind of clutch and go for survival, like, well, what could I do? What could I possibly do to make money? And I think that the larger transformational purpose of this time is to use this as an opening to, what do I really love to do? Because if you are doing what you love to do, the money is going to follow.
And you know, that is so true, Katie. There are so many people, and I've discovered this in a lot of the clients that are coming to me because I'm a life coach, but what is happening, and I can kind of relate to it somewhat because it happened to me when I was growing up. My parents were very, very structured and very organized and very strict. And my father worked for National Cash Register. Do you remember that company?
Oh, sure do, yeah.
Yeah, my father worked for National Cash Register, and my mother stayed home until I was the fifth child, until all of the siblings, or all of us, my siblings and myself, were in school.
Yes.
And then when I was in the first grade, then she started working in the school system. She was a reading specialist. So they were both very structured in how they did everything. So I grew up thinking corporate America was it.
Well, sure,
you know,
well, because that's what you learned.
Right, that's what I learned as a child, and I thought that was it. That was the way to go, and there was nothing else to it, nothing else to think about. So, and a lot of my clients are saying that you know what, I have never really thought that there was anything else other than corporate America. So, I mean, they're having to rediscover.
Yes.
Like I said, I always knew in the back of my mind that I had a passion. I just didn't think I'd be able to make a living doing it until, you know, I got smart and started reading books and started looking at all the lifelong learning things and you know, attracting to you what you want and your thought control and all of. Once I started learning all of that, and you tell people those things and it just kind of goes in one ear and out the other.
Right, until it lands on their doorstep, and then, you know, and then people really have the opportunity to learn in their, you know, in the laboratory of their daily life. Yeah, I think that the great opportunity here is to move out of a kind of entitled culture that many of us grew up in, where, you know, I can remember when my father did work for GM, it was considered kind of a family business. You know, when you were in GM, they took care of you for life. You had your pension, you know, you had your benefits, and there's something about, you know, it's kind of like a, you know, an extension of the plantation, you know, and in exchange for that, people were kind of, you know, enslaved to their work. And I
Absolutely.
Think that, you know, as a lifelong entrepreneur, I've been, you know, creating my own businesses for almost 40 years now. I've learned over and over again that it's my initiative and my looking for, what can I provide that I love to do that is also of value to others? And you'd be surprised about where, you know, the things that are of value to people that people who just know how to do those things just don't even think of that they would be of value to people, like learning how to speak in public or, you know, teaching the piano or teaching people how to walk dogs so they can take care of people's dogs when they're, you know, doing their work. And there are all kinds of opportunities out there just being waited to be discovered, but people aren't going to find them if they're not, you know, if they don't bring their head up out of the sand. And if you're in despair, you're not going to see what the opportunities are.
It's well known
that there were more jobs created and more wealth created during the Depression than at any other time in modern history. So it's not that the opportunities aren't there. I think it's that people get caught in the cycle of despair, and so they're actually not even able to see what the opportunities are, which is why I suggest that people, you know, kind of clear out the, you know, the emotional reservoir by letting themselves feel it and express it. And another thing that people can do is simply let themselves breathe. You'd think that, you know, that kind of advice is kind of simplistic, but it's actually a very profound way to shift. When you take a breath, a deep, relaxed breath into what you're feeling, you actually liberate that emotional energy. It becomes creative energy. It becomes available to you to use by choice rather than something that weighs you down. So breathing and expressing are wonderful ways to actually acknowledge, face and acknowledge what you're feeling, and then you can gather your resources to make some new choices. And we've seen real and continue to see real miracles happen for people as they do that. And so that's what I would recommend to people. And I'm also recognizing that for many people it's such a shock to see, you know, something that looked like it was moving along just as smooth as can be, you know, it's kind of go under all of a sudden. I mean, it's been relatively sudden for a lot of people, and you know, the folks who, you know, at all ends of the spectrum who have, you know, lost money and homes and cars and so on.
Right. And what you just said, I'm going to thank you 100-fold because I'm an example. I'm a living example. When I was in corporate America, right up to the time that I decided to leave corporate America, every thought in my mind, it was misery. It was something negative. I mean, mm-hmm. I didn't like this. I didn't like that. Oh, this is going to be a terrible day, blah, blah. And when I decided, you know, after reading so many books and reading a lot of you guys' books, you guys helped me a lot, you and your husband.
No, thank you.
Thank you. But after reading and understanding, you know, how you draw energy to you and your thought control and how all of those things are really play a part, I started exactly what you just said. I started learning how to deep breathe and learning how to do the progressive relaxation and learning how to meditate and visualize, thought control, affirmations. I learned how to do those things, and I started doing it. And I tell you, Katie, over a few months, my thoughts really did start changing.
Yeah, isn't that
so
amazing?
Kind of like I reprogrammed my stores inside. I reprogrammed all the junk inside. And then I had good positive things to pull out instead of only negative thoughts was going to jump in my mind because that's all that were there. But all of the things that I reprogrammed and re-taught myself what I wanted to store and what I wanted to let go of, and then now it's so much better and easier because I still have challenges in my life.
Yes, and everybody does. I think it's part of being human, and humans love
Absolutely.
To solve problems. We just need a better class of problem.
And I was talking to my best friend just the other day, and she may be even listening today, but I was telling her, I said, you know, she knows some challenges I'm having, and I said, you know, I'm choosing my thoughts. And she was very impressed. She said, I am really excited that you're able to do that. I said, I sure am able to do it because I'm in control of my thoughts. They're not in control of me.
Yeah.
And I choose to focus on this because I'm happy about that.
Yeah, that's such a wonderful thing, Kathy. We've, you know, in psychology, too, one of the big things we've learned in the last 100 years is that what you focus on grows. And that
right.
if you focus on what's wrong and what's negative and complaining, that that's what's going to grow in you. But if you start focusing on, you know, I wonder what I could contribute of value today that's
yes.
going to really bring abundance to me. You know, I wonder if you find yourself criticizing yourself, you turn that criticism into an appreciation right there on the spot, then you grow in your ability to appreciate yourself. That opens up more really tangible. It's not woo-woo. It really opens up tangible, you know, creativity and vitality that gives you more of an opportunity to see the choices when they come along and to initiate, you know, rather than just being, you know, carried along in the sludge.
Right, right. And I know a lot of people tell me, my clients tell me, and friends and colleagues and family members, because, I mean, just about everyone I know has been laid off. But, you know, they tell me, what you just said, I know, I understand you need to pay your bills and you need to earn a living and you need to get those things done. But worrying about it is not going to make it any better.
No. They'll still be there. You know, you can worry for 2 hours and the bill's still going to be sitting there.
Yeah. Exactly. So why not, since you have to focus your energy and your thoughts somewhere, why not focus it on something that's positive and upbeat? And, I mean, a lot of people say, well, I don't know what I like to do. I don't have a passion. Well, start with your hobbies.
Mm-hmm. Everybody has something they love to do. They just don't realize, or they may not give it value. So, you know, when Gay started out, you know, the thing he loves to do is to sit around with people on the floor talking about the meaning of life and talking about transformation. And, you know, he had that same thought of, well, how could I possibly make a living doing that? But he started with six people in his living room, you know, back in the 70s. And, you know, here we are today, you know, having spoken to 10 million people. And so it grows. But along the way, he was having a great time. And what I've always loved to do is to explore with people the meaning of their movement, the meaning of their mannerisms and facial tics and the kind of stuff that they're doing on that new show, Lie to Me. That's been my profession all my life. And so glad to see it finally coming into the mainstream. And I have the same thought of, well, how could I possibly make a living, you know, by teaching people how to, you know, how to move? But I said, well, this is what I love to do. And I found, you know, I was led to find people and find that it was actually a profession that I could learn and that I could join. And I've made an extremely good living teaching people how to move for almost 40 years. So everybody has something that they love to do. And what I invite people to do is to open up that little door that says, oh, I couldn't possibly, and say, gee, I wonder how I could really create abundance and value doing this thing I love to do. And then let your imagination, let your friends, let the universe support you in finding out how that's going to happen.
And you know, Katie, I really don't mean to pick on men. So guys, my guy men listeners, please forgive me. I'm not picking on you. I'm just trying to help you. I don't know what it is, but men just tend to, like you said earlier, you know, the first step is to kind of let it out, allow yourself to feel it and write it down, or, you know, just journal it, or, you know, have a diary or whatever. But guys have such a problem just expressing that pain or that unhappiness. They can't get it out. I mean, what can we do to help them?
Well, you know,
go and
I used to have that point of view, and here's what I've been seeing in recent years, at least over the last 10 years, is that the men that I see, and I was just remembering being teaching one of our foundation seminars in Japan a few years ago, which was mostly attended by men. This was, you know, voluntary. This was, you know, these weren't dragged along by their spouses. These are men who came because they wanted to. And we spent most of the time really exploring feelings. They were very interested in how to open up to their feelings, how to express their feelings, the value of expressing their feelings. And what I'm seeing is that men are getting it. They're really getting the value of that it's important to feel and to share. And my sense is that a large part of that is simply what men learned. You know, just like women learned that it wasn't okay to get angry, men learned that it wasn't okay to cry. And it's such a cultural conditioning that when men are in a place, you know, with a partner or in a group where feelings are really acceptable and no big deal, they do open up to feeling. You know, it's right there. I think it's just a matter of kind of peeling off the cultural learning, and then you find your feelings are all right there. And when people open up to feelings, when men open up to their feelings and they get softer and more contactful, you know, they get more connected. They don't feel like they have to hold the whole burden themselves. They really see that they can partner with others, they can collaborate with others, and they relax, their blood pressure goes down, you know, they live longer, they have more fun.
Yeah, I've had two examples, two extreme examples in my life. My father was a very, very sensitive man, and I did see him cry many times, you know, during, you know, when he lost loved ones, family loved ones and whatnot. But I was married for a long time, and my ex-spouse, we are extremely good friends today, but when I was married to him, I mean, I think he still pretty much has the same personality, but we're good, better friends than we were married partners, but he just never cried.
Yeah.
I think I was with him for 20 years. I think I saw him cry once. And that
That's
was
very common.
A tragic death in his family. And you know, there were so many other reasons why during situations he could have cried, but he just did not. He just didn't do it.
I think that there are many cultures, you know, there's some places, you know, like in sports, in the military, in corporate America, there's some cultures where feelings are considered, you know, really kind of substandard. You know, if you're feeling, it means that you're not really on the ball. You're probably not really as smart as other people. You might get a little out of control. And I do think that that is changing. And the best thing that will help that continue to change is that each of us takes responsibility for making friends with our feelings so that feelings are no big deal. We have feelings just like we have brown hair or blue eyes, and we have feelings. Everybody has feelings.
Right.
And the more you open up to them and make friends with them, the more you get to garner the juiciness of your feelings. Your juiciness, it's like if you were trying to run an engine with no oil. You got all the parts, you know, like you got your cognitive brain, but if you don't have your feelings, you don't have any oil. There's no juiciness, and you will burn out.
That's right. I love parallels. I love the way you do that.
Thank you. I just made that one up. That one just came to me.
It.
I was so pleased. See, that's what I mean by when you open up to flow, you get more creative.
Exactly. I was at church the other day, and the pastor talked about how life is similar to a relay race. You know, when you pass that baton and,
you know,
it really matters. I mean, one person can mess up in the race, and the whole race is gone.
Yep, you really are responsible for that moment of passing on the baton. And I think that's one of the great pleasures of mentoring that you were mentioning earlier, that, you know, the great joy of passing on, of contributing to somebody else. Everywhere I go in the world, that's what people are really interested in. They're more interested in making a difference, in contributing to the lives, not only their lives, but the lives of others. And that's, I think, what really creates abundance. The moment you put your focus on what can I contribute that I'd love, but it's also a value to others, that's one of the best ways to get a big flow going through you. Not just how can I survive. You know,
that's
if you just survive, you're going to be living at a level that, you know, we've been living at for millions of years. And I think as humans, we're really ready to take that next step now.
That's right. And I know this might sound a little bit out there, but I truly believe because we're all made up of energy. We all have energy running throughout our bodies. Our thoughts are energetic forces, and I think we're all connected. I think every living person on this planet, we are all connected.
I totally agree with you, Kathy, and I think that the research, you know, physics and, you know, quantum physics and molecular biology, are all pointing to the same thing, that indeed we are all connected, we're all one body, and that we're all one body with the earth, that the earth is is our big body, and, you know, we are, everything that we do affects everybody else.
Absolutely, and I think that's why there's so much misery in the world, because there's more of that. The media focuses on bad situations, that, you know, because that's what people want to hear. Well,
you,
I think
you hear about the suicides and everything because that's what gets the ratings up, and that's why the world is like it is, because there is more negative energy out there than it is positive energy.
And I also think that that is changing. I think that, as well as the other feelings and people taking responsibility. God bless us all for electing Obama. I think that we're getting some viable examples of taking responsibility, of the power of being accountable and how much creativity that opens up. One of our initiatives that we have on our website is our Conscious Living and Loving Initiative, where we have a handout that people can go to on our website, which invites everybody to make three moves that will change the world. One is to speak honestly. The second is to take healthy responsibility, and the third is to speak from appreciation. And we want to live in a world where everybody, including our politicians, have committed to and are acting from those choices to speak authentically, so that blame and the blame game stops. And people are just saying, when someone, a reporter, asked Obama about the whole Daschle of tax thing, he said, well, I screwed up, over and out. He just said what was so, and then took responsibility. We're going to look and see what happened here so that we don't recreate that problem. And then appreciating how often he demonstrates the power of appreciation. And when he opens his speeches and when he meets people, you can tell he's leading with appreciation. And that kind of modeling for us is something I think that each person can stand in their own life. We can all make those three choices every day.
That's right. That's right. And, Katie, I want to make sure that I want to put your information. Now, what is your website, you and Gay's website?
I want to plug it into
that room.
Our website, which has all kinds of resources on it that people can use right now, is www.hendricks.com. And we also have an 800 number, which is 800-688-0772. If people go to our website, they will find we have 7 videos that people can download about how to create a thriving relationship, and people can get those. We call them our 7 magic moves. They can download our initiative, which gives specific instructions about how do you learn how to speak honestly and how do you learn to take healthy responsibility and to appreciate. So those are things that people can learn right now, as well as look at our calendar and see about our live trainings and all of the other things that we're doing. So I really recommend people go to our website because there are a lot of resources that we provide for people, articles and blogs and just all kinds of goodies.
That's great. And I also want to add, I tell you, I have been reading from Katie and Gay for years, and they are fabulous. I'm going to be giving away a free copy of Gay's latest book and of one of Katie CDs, Sex, Money, and Spirit. So if you guys want to go to my website, www.chollowayhill.com, you're familiar with it, you've been there before, and sign up to win that, because I want to get this out there. The Big Leap, that's the latest book, The Big Leap, L-E-A-P, and it's fabulous.
Yes, it is fabulous.
It really is. If you want to take it to the next level, please, please, please get that book. So, Katie, it has absolutely been wonderful. I knew this was going to be a fast hour. Your information has helped so many people. Oh, my goodness. And me, too. It just really reinforces when I hear people that have the same beliefs and just get it. You get it. I love that. I love that.
Well, thank you. It's been a great pleasure being with you this hour. And thanks for what you're doing in the world.
Oh, no problem at all. I will continue. Trust me. I will continue because I finally am where I'm supposed to be.
Well, wonderful. Well, continue.
Thank you so much. And give my thanks to your husband as well. And thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. We are going to sign off for now. I am Kathy Holloway Hill. My co-host, Tony Lamont, will be returning next week. And we will see everyone next Wednesday. Good night, everyone.